Hello! Today is Friday, March 8th, and welcome to episode 307 of Fault Lines, the National Security Institute's podcast that gets you quickly up to speed 3 times a week on the national security and foreign policy debates shaking up America. I'm Jessica Jones, NSI's Deputy Executive Director. I almost messed up my own name. And today I'm joined by NSI's Founder and Executive Director.
Wait, it's like you were doing the State of the Union.
I'm trying to find the words. And NSI senior fellows Les Munson, who is the only one not rocking an NSI fleece because he's rocking his own vest, and Morgan Vigna. So the NSI team, the ones behind the scene, asked for a little bit more. You know, it's been a little dark and somber the last few episodes, so a little more levity. So we're going to be talking about President Joe Biden's State of the Union address from last night. Which I will say was not everybody's choice here in the room's top pick for today's episode. So before the speech, there, you know, some foreign policy pundits said that foreign policy wouldn't be a major focus of his address, but he actually began his speech by referencing FDR's State of the Union in 1941 as war was raging in Europe. He also mentioned Ukraine and the Russia, the conflict in Gaza. He called out former President Trump for telling Russia it could do whatever it wanted with NATO countries not spending enough on defense. He discussed he announced the administration's plans to build a temporary pier off the coast of Palestinian territory to facilitate aid delivery. He barely mentioned China, though. And so in addition, just for some levity, there was some also fun. I mean, it's a human interaction, right? So there was a lot of fun moments. I don't know if you guys saw the video of President Biden's face when he sees Marjorie Taylor Greene for the first time in her MAGA hat and her whole do up. His reaction is amazing. There apparently the distributed speech also had 77 exclamation marks. George Santos was on the House floor because, of course, he had to come back for that. And my favorite actually is a meme. It's VP Kamala Harris looking at the second gentleman. And it says, Barbie has a great day every day, but Ken only has a great day if Barbie looks at him. And it's Doug's like smiling face. So there's a lot of just great moments. So my first question, because not everyone here on the show wanted to talk about it, was why didn't you guys want to talk about State of the Union? Like, what bigger news was there from yesterday? And did Joe Biden's State of the Union actually change your feelings on us talking about it this morning? I'm going to start with you, Les.
Well, I wanted to talk about Haiti because there's a country just a few miles from our borders that is completely falling apart and is going to turn into an international catastrophe of the first order and possibly an opportunity for our adversaries around the world to subvert us from within. So I thought that would be a good foreign policy topic. But at the end of the day, I think I was wrong, Jones, and I think you were right. The State of the Union was fascinating. It was long. It had a lot of it reminded me of Russian wars of attrition because it went on until, I think if you included the response from Senator Britt, about 2.5 hours of my life that I'm not going to get back. It just went on and on and on. I think Joe Biden was trying to demonstrate that he can stay up late and be the last guy standing in the room and talk to every single person. And I got to admit,
he did.
It was persuasive. He did do that. I think he got the best of the Republicans in the little shouting matches. I think some of his foreign policy stuff was pretty thin and transparently not all that great. So we could dive into that. But I would say overall, in terms of theater, he did pretty good.
Jamil.
Well, I think there was a lot of news yesterday. I mean, the U.S. is going to build a port in Gaza. You know, there's 275 people killed or abducted in Nigeria. I mean, there's a lot of news going on around the world that we could have talked about other than what we thought was going to be a Joe Biden speech focused on domestic issues and that he might flub and, you know, and wouldn't go well. Turns out Joe Biden brought it yesterday. I mean, he was, you know, like he was a little loud, you know, I mean, it's weird for me to say that, right? But like, he was yelling a little bit at people, but he was there. He was present. He was engaged. He hit some high points, to be honest with you, on Ukraine. He made a persuasive case calling out Reagan. I thought his calling out, by the way, not on a foreign policy national security topic, but on calling out the Supreme Court. That was super weird, and I think like, you know, vaguely inappropriate.
Yeah, is he going to change the Dobbs and Roe v. Wade decisions legislatively? Is that what he said?
My point is he's basically like saying to the Supreme Court, like, look at how women voters are going to vote. Like, I get that, but that's not something you say to the Supreme Court. It's just a weird thing to do. But that's not national security, not foreign policy. I thought on the foreign policy stuff, he hit it pretty hard. You know, and I mean, I don't know what to tell you. Like, Joe Biden looked pretty like together. And the funny thing was, like, when he came in, he was still a little, you know, his walking around wasn't great, you know, and it wasn't, but he got on stage. He was ready to, I mean, on fire. So, you know, good on him.
Morgan?
You know, when, well, first of all, Joe Biden came in hot. Like he was ready to roll last night. I mean, his campaign team had been talking up this speech for the entire week, saying that, you know, alluding to the fact that he needed to demonstrate that vigor and enthusiasm, and that he, you know, wasn't a walking corpse. And so I think he succeeded in that. I personally had a bet with various people in my office that the speech wouldn't go over 45 minutes. Other people actually had, you know, less than that. So I think that going 66 minutes was pretty impressive for a man of his age. Let's just say that. I will note that this was clearly a very political speech. The general election has begun. He mentioned Donald Trump without actually mentioning his name around 13 times.
That was weird, right? Morgan, that was a little weird, right?
It's clearly, this speech was much more the tone that you would find in a convention, right? Yeah. Not the State of the Union.
What about that chant of four more years from the audience?
Exactly.
Has that happened before? That seems totally inappropriate to me.
Well, hold on. You know what? Inappropriate? You have people screaming liar over and over again. Like, that's inappropriate.
Well, yeah, that's not good either. But the four more years, they were like turning it into a campaign rally, Morgan, to exactly your point.
Yeah.
Which is
so,
not what it should be.
Truly. And so, I mean, I was really disappointed, particularly in the foreign policy piece, because the actual policy, I felt was really overshadowed by the politics. And so when it came to the national security piece, we have, you know, he started off on Ukraine and talking about we need to send more security assistance to Ukraine. It's like, well, Mr. President, if you had sent F-16s and other things that the Ukrainians could have actually used to defeat Russia at the start of the war, maybe we wouldn't necessarily be, you know, you wouldn't be begging Congress to pass a supplemental this time around. When it came to the war in Gaza, I thought this was a complete slap in the face to Israel. He acknowledged the hostage crisis. He acknowledged, you know, Hamas's attacks on 10/7, but he spent the majority of his speech pandering to the progressives, talking about the plight of the humanitarian situation, the plight of Gazans, which, don't get me wrong, is not great. But let's put it this way. I think when you have Mia Shem in the gallery looking down about Joe Biden and members of Congress basically ripping Israel, that sends a message. And so if I'm Netanyahu, I realize that I've got a problem in Congress right now. Not only that, but I do think that, you know, we mentioned the port situation earlier. I mean, I think Congress needs to run some massive oversight on this, because that is just ripe for waste, fraud, abuse, and frankly, U.S. foreign assistance falling into the hands of Hamas. So
I don't know, Morgan. I actually think it undermines, to be honest with you, I think it undermines our case for a strong Israeli and continued Israeli response if we're not talking about getting humanitarian supplies in. I think that like the average person in America is like, look, fine, we need to fight a war there, or our allies need to fight a war there because of the horrific attacks, right? The thousands dead, the equivalent of a dozen 9/11s. But the idea that we're gonna be like, we shouldn't do humanitarian aid, and I mean, I think that is a bad beat. Like being against humanitarian aid is a winner for no one, right?
Yeah,
that's just crazy.
Jamil, it was the tone of it. The fact that it was a passing mention to what happened to the Israelis, and the bulk of the conversation was very politically charged and focused on trying to win over those progressives who are sympathetic to the Palestinians.
And he's got the electoral problem.
All the applause lines for the president were on messages about constraining Israel. That's what the Democrats applauded, which was notable. Jamil, I totally agree with you on the humanitarian aid, 1,000%, truly. But it was notable for me that the Democrats were up and cheering every time he talked about Israel being wrong and needing to do things differently, and never for they have the right to respond to Hamas.
I do think it was crazy that the speaker sat behind him when he talked about Ukraine and didn't stand up on the defense of freedom. I mean, the Republican Party has gone wrong.
Overwhelming applause for that. Yeah.
I mean, Reagan is spinning in his grave. Like, this is ridiculous that we are so captured by this Donald Trump MAGA idiocy when it comes to things like freedom and democracy in Europe. I mean, it's outrageous that the Speaker of the House sat there. I mean, he's a serious person. Mike Johnson is not this character that people have made of him. And the fact that he just sat there, it was embarrassing. I thought that's pandering to the base.
Speaking of the, you know, Ukraine and the call for Congress to continue support, do you think Joe Biden, whether it was, if the audience was folks around him in that room, right, or the average American voter, do you think he won anyone over? Do you think he persuaded anyone or not?
I don't think so. I mean, I think the mistake he made was not talking. Once again, I don't understand why they do this, but like these are American weapons being built in America by American workers. Like, why is that not the conversation? I just don't understand why Joe Biden can't get himself to say those words. It's weird.
All right. That's a wrap. Thanks so much to Devlin Burney, Claude Jennings, and the entire NSI team for their help in producing today's episode. Join us again on Monday, March 11th, for another great episode of Fault Lines, the National Security Institute's podcast that gets you smart fast on the national security and foreign policy debates shaking up America. We're on YouTube, so check out our faces with all our matching fleeces there. And if you like what you heard or saw, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe.